There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
An Erios production.
Menopause is coming and the men have all left town, but I'm not giving up until I see that baby crown. 39 and single, can someone help me out? He could be bald and bearded, short or tall, funny, smart, love basketball, from gay to straight, black to white. With an underbite, I just need sperm. Spermcast.
Hello, everybody. Guys, gals, y'alls, youngins, yins. I have had a hard week. I mean, nothing crazy happened. I just felt sick to my stomach and I had headaches and it was just shitty. And then I had so much work. So I'm just going to skip any interesting intros today. Not that they're ever interesting. See, this is where my head's at right now. Anyway, I've run out of time. It's late on Monday night. So thank you to my newest patron, Evelyn and her SMC mommy, for bringing my total per month to exactly $700. Now, if we could just get to $1,000, that would be great. If there's anyone out there that wants to donate $300 a month, please go for it. Also, thank you to those of you who wrote in to tell me that you did an ERA and that it was helpful in your journey. Evelyn and her SMC mommy, you are one of them. I don't remember where I left. I think you were one of them. I don't remember where I left off last week, but I think I was deciding whether or not to do the ERA or to do a transfer at the end of this month. If you remember, an ERA is an endometrial receptivity array, and it's basically a biopsy of your endometrial lining. Well, I have decided to relax, slow down, do the ERA, and save any baby-making attempts for the end of next month. I've got an ultrasound on Friday to see how my lining is looking. Then I go straight to the airport, fly to New York, and start my progesterone injections. And I do that for 5 days, and I spend Christmas with my family, and then I fly back to LA on the 26th to do the biopsy of my uterine lining on Friday the 27th. And I am so happy I'm going home, and I can't wait to hug and snuggle with everyone in my family, even though they probably won't want me to. Now, it's interview time. As I mentioned, I wasn't feeling great last week, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just skip the show next week. But then, wonderful Selena texted me out of the blue and told me that she has a couple friends who listen to the podcast and they'd love to talk to me, and I was like, hell yes, I'm going to ask them to be on the podcast this weekend. And so I asked them, and they were able to come over on Saturday and chat with me, and I am so happy they did, because they just made my whole week so much better. So please give it up for my new friends, Sarah and Eddie.
I have two strangers in my house right now, you guys. But I know they're cool because Selena Dean told me that they are. Yep. And apparently we have a lot of mutual friends,
mm-hmm.
or friends in common. Mm-hmm. We don't have to speak in Facebook terms.
No, yeah, we have a... We found out through Facebook, though, that we have friends in common. So
who are these friends?
Improv people.
Yeah.
In the improv world, which is a small world.
Yeah.
Well, we also know Amanda and Matt.
Oh, you do? How do you know them? Wait, have I met you guys before?
I don't think so.
Okay. How do you know Amanda and Matt?
We both know Matt through Comedy Sports.
Oh.
And know Amanda through Matt.
Do you mind sharing your ages?
I'm 34.
Oh. And I'm 33.
Oh my gosh, you're so young.
So young and yet so troubled, Molly.
Okay, so this is gonna, we're gonna get into it then.
Yeah.
You're troubled with fertility issues.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I know, that's what we wanna know.
What the hell? You have to start from the top.
Okay, that's why I'm really happy Eddie's here, because I'm bad at all the past and timelines and he's good at that.
Yeah, I prepped Sarah trying to ask her like, okay, do you know when things happened? And she said no, and that's why I'm here. But it's your body and your story, so I'm going to let you take the lead, and I'll jump in.
Okay. Well, we, like, I think most people thought, like, oh, when you want to get pregnant, you're just going to get pregnant.
Yeah.
So we got married, and then I didn't
How long ago did you get married? She looks to Eddie.
We got married in January of 2016, so almost 4 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't want to be pregnant right away. Mm-hmm. So we waited like 10 months before we started trying, thinking like it'll just be a month or two mm-hmm. and then there'll be a baby in your house. And then that was not what happened. When did we start to get concerned?
6 or 7 months, we started to wonder. Because for our friends, seemingly it was like, you know, drop of a hat, they were pregnant.
Yeah. Were you paying attention to the time of month and all that stuff? You were just doing it like normal people do it.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, we were not paying super close attention, mm-hmm. but we were starting to get a little curious. And then so the first thing we did was I had a friend who, and my acupuncturist, who recommended I go see an allergist. So we did that.
An allergist?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For fertility.
Well, we didn't. Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
And I guess a lot of people, that is a game changer for them.
But why? Do you have any ideas?
If you have a secret allergy that you don't know about, mm-hmm. it can be weakening your immune system. And then I guess that can just make it more challenging.
Or maybe you could have like an allergy to sperm, or your body's rejecting it or something.
That
thought did cross my mind.
But when they do the
one time, I'm going to cut this part, but one time somebody.
Go for it.
Long-term boyfriend. Came on my stomach and I got rash.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sperm allergies are actually fairly common.
But they do not do that when they do the poke at your back test because no, that would be.
The doctor does it on your back and. No. Okay. Yeah. We're not. No. See, you look like nice people. I barely know. I just
No,
met
we're not.
You.
I love this. I love getting right into it with strangers. So, all right. We're in.
Okay. Good. We just wanted to sort of let down the boundaries. Yeah. You know, we're here. Okay. Okay, I'm not interrupting.
Okay, so they do like all the kind of pokes on your back with each one is like been dabbed in a different allergen. Mm-hmm. And then, so I also did the allergy test around the same time, mostly for solidarity with Sarah. And the allergist came in.
Sound like a good guy.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
He is, yeah. He's very
I'm not. Helpful. I'm really not. The allergist came in and was like, you're fine. You don't have any allergies.
Okay.
And mind you, he does this every day. This is his whole career. And when he came in and saw Sarah's back, he went, oh my God.
Yeah, he did.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And then he was like, where's your phone? I got to take a picture of this. This is crazy. And I had no idea that I had food allergies and I had like a million of them. So we dealt with that, which was really hard. I had to give up eating like all fun
things.
Were
you having symptoms of food allergies beforehand?
Kind of, but I didn't. I just thought that's what being alive was.
Yeah.
I thought being alive was like you get headaches a lot, you get tired a lot. Like that was my life. So yeah. I thought that was fine. That took a long time to get used to. And then we still were having no luck. So then we went to a doctor who was a real creep, I thought. Mm. Am I skipping a step?
Well, I just want to point out that, like, while you're doing all this, all your friends, it seems like everybody's having a baby.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it feels like all of our friends and us got married at roughly the same time mm-hmm. and, like, just, like, pregnant, pregnant, pregnant. So, like, we are skipping a lot of months, you know, and we can tell the story in a pretty quick amount of time, but, like, I don't know how much you feel, but, like, you're just like, Jesus, another one? Like, you got to go to another baby shower. I don't. Sarah does, but, like... I'm not that good of a guy. So, yeah, I mean, this is like basically a year from when we started trying to when we saw our first fertility doctor.
Yeah.
And like, you can say it in a sentence. It took a year, but like that year was a year.
It was a long year.
Yeah.
So we saw the first fertility doctor. I was not a fan because he was a real Beverly Hills doctor and like Beverly Hills smile and like... clear furniture and then he did some tests and this was his explanation to me. Oh, I think everything's fine. You're kind of late on ovulating, so I'll give you a shot, but everything's fine. And I was like, what is that? Like, am I always late on ovulating? Is that an issue? What's happening? I don't know. And while he's telling me this, he's grabbing my arm and walking me and pushing me out by the arm back into the waiting room. So I did not like that.
No.
So he gave me what I now know is just the HSG shot to force ovulation.
Right.
And was like, go home and call us with the good news. This is going to be great. And I was like, okay. And It wasn't great. Nothing happened.
HCG?
HCG. CG. He's right. He's right.
This is why he's the fact checker.
Yeah.
And then what happened after that?
Yeah. This is a period we don't remember. Because we didn't go back there. Mm. Well, I had to go back for sperm analysis. Yeah. And
flying colors?
Yes.
He's very proud of it. He's truly proud. And he was really worried beforehand, like, that he was going to have low testosterone. But he can grow a beard in like one day. So I knew that wasn't an issue.
It's true.
Some time passed. And then, oh, I think I saw my regular OBGYN. And then I did the HSG, which is the dye test. And then that was almost the same thing where people are rushing you through the information. And it was like, oh, everything's fine. You have a heart-shaped uterus, but everything's fine. It's fine.
Oh, you do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, is this a septum or a bicornuate uterus?
Septum.
Okay. Okay.
No, they treated it just, I mean, not, they didn't treat it. They just said heart-shaped uterus. They just said, you have a heart-shaped uterus. All right. See you later.
Bye.
Okay, assholes.
Well, and I think because we are young, or we were younger at this point, even though it had been over a year, nobody was taking us seriously. Mm-hmm. Even though we had friends like, how long did it take you? 2 months, 3 months, 4 months. And we were, you know, upwards of a year at this point, a year and a half. Like, nobody cared.
And I think at your age, that age, you're supposed to, 6 months is when you're supposed to worry. Is that correct?
Well, it definitely started worrying at 6 months.
No, it's 12 months.
12, mm-hmm. Yeah. You're supposed to try for 12 months, which we had been at that point. By the time we found out about the heart-shaped uterus, it was 12 months, but still, like Sarah's saying, they're just like, well, you know, keep trying. Mm-hmm. Again, I need to point out how isolating it is to feel like it's just not working and nobody knows why, and no one is even taking you seriously as to figuring out why.
Well, and everybody's advice is meant really nicely, but is terrible. And it's, the advice is like, take your wife out, get drunk, do drugs. It's like, we're
doctors?
No, no, not the doctors. That would be amazing. Just like all your friends tell you those things. Or
yeah.
Some doctors did say, like, try not to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're like, oh, great. Just don't worry. Cool. Okay, yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. So more time went on. We met with a new doctor. And the first thing she said was, this heart-shaped uterus is an issue.
Mm. And who was that doctor? We like her?
We do like her. We have since moved on from her, but we do like her. It's Dr. Beck.
Oh, I mean, been to Dr. Beck. I do love her. Very expensive place.
Yes.
Which is where I am now.
Yes.
Oh.
Because my eggs are there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, home is where your eggs are.
I'll be in LA until I've got all my eggs.
She is great and so on it. And so that was the first thing she identified was, according to her, that's a big issue because I guess most implantations happen at that top of what for me is a heart shape. Mm-hmm. Everybody else, they have more room up there. And so she recommended a procedure, a small surgery. So we did that. And that was fine. It was totally easy. I was very worried about it, but it was totally chill and easy. And everybody was great. And then you have to take a few months after that to recoup.
Yeah.
Because if you did get pregnant after that, you would miscarry because your uterus is still healing.
Yeah.
So that was some time.
During that, they found scar tissue in the uterus, which they couldn't figure out why. And they mentioned, like, there was scar tissue in the uterus. Have you had a miscarriage before? Sarah has not. So, and they were just like, okay, well, can't figure that out, but all right.
Okay.
Very bizarre.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe you had a miscarriage and didn't even know it.
Maybe.
But you're pretty regular.
I don't know. I mean, could be. But yes, I never knew about it if that happened. And so time passed. I had to heal from that. And then we did 3 natural cycles with Dr. Beck, which is just...
IUIs?
Where she helps you.
Monitors you.
Mm-hmm. She monitors, she helps you time everything. She gives you a very detailed chart.
Mm-hmm.
When your intimate time is going to be and everything. And then nothing worked with that. And so then we moved on. This is where things start to get crazy. Then we moved on to a medicated IUI.
Okay.
So we did shots to stimulate so that you have multiple eggs and that you drop more than one egg when it is ovulation time.
Right.
And as these shots are happening, I am in the worst pain of my life, but not from the injection themselves. Like, needles are needles and with, you know, the natural cycle, you get used to needles too, because you're still triggering with a shot.
Oh, right.
But it was how everything felt on the inside after those shots. Like the stimulation of everything felt horrible. And
like
I remember
bad cramps?
No, it felt like something was going to burst out of me like Alien.
Oh my gosh.
Like out of my left side. Yeah, it felt really intense. And I remember driving and I couldn't like go over speed bumps without clutching my side. And the night before we were going to trigger, I was lying awake all night because I was in fear that Eddie was going to roll over and put his arm on me. And like, I didn't want to be touched. Like, it was horrible.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, I just quick question. Mm-hmm. And she's monitoring you and everything looks okay from what she can see?
Everything looks okay. Okay. And I have never done this before. And so much of the journey sucks and is painful. And, like, the HSG isn't fun. So I'm just like, well, I guess this is what it's like.
Right.
So I go in for the IUI. She does everything she's supposed to do. And, you know, she's asking, like, how are you feeling? And I'm like, oh, not great. And she's like, well, yeah, people get bloating. And I'm like, okay, I guess that's what's happening. Like, I guess this is bloating. And but it was excruciating. So that happens. And then the IUI fails.
Spectacularly.
It fails so fast. I don't even get to make it to the test day.
How do you know it fails?
Well, you get your period.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah,
I said,
yeah.
Sarah is pretty regular. She got her period that month 5 days early.
Yeah, it was like, we are not doing this. Get out of here. Gosh. And I just felt at that point something really isn't right. Like, it's not just the shape. It's not just mistiming. Something is off. And we went back to Dr. Beck and, you know, trying to make a game plan. And I said, I don't know if I could do it again because it was so painful. And she goes, what do you mean? And I was like, well, that was the worst pain I've ever had in my life. And she was like, that's not right. And during this whole thing, there's been other things that have been happening that have made me think, like, do I have endometriosis? Mm-hmm. But then I'm like, well, I'm not Lena Dunham collapsing at the Met. Mm-hmm. So I've never collapsed. So I'm like, probably not. And then also another doctor I had told me, like, well, have you been to the emergency room because of your cramps? And I was like, no. She's like, well, then you don't have it. I was like, okay, so I'm thinking I'm just a baby, but my cramps aren't that bad.
And you had brought the possibility of endometriosis up to Dr. Beck, and she said, well, I can either treat the endometriosis or we can do fertility. Mm. You can't do both. And at this point, we had already been so far along in the fertility journey that it seemed like, well, okay, I guess it's not that, or we're not going to treat it.
Mm-hmm. So then I...
sorry, but this was before...
I think she mentioned, what if I have endometriosis, to Dr. Beck right before the IUI, right before we tried that.
Gotcha.
And the excruciating pain.
Yeah, well, I was starting to catch on to the fact that maybe my pain, even before the IUI pain, just wasn't normal. But whenever you tell someone, even other women, like, it's really painful, they're like, yeah. And you know?
I never got it. I never got it my whole life. And then because I didn't get cramps until I was like 35, I was like, what is everybody complaining about? Like
babies.
A total asshole. like some dude, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And now I kind of have an idea of it, but my cramps aren't that bad. So I'm sorry, everybody, that I've never given the support that I should have my whole life.
Well, I also think that my pain was sort of like that boiling frog syndrome. You ever heard that creepy story? Or it's like the anecdote of, like, if you put a frog in boiling water, it will jump out. But if I don't think this is true. It's just an anecdote.
It's not true, but it's a great metaphor.
Oh, if it starts at a normal temperature and it just goes up?
Then you won't notice. Mm-hmm.
And it'll boil to death.
Aww.
It won't. Don't worry. It'll still jump out. But it's a great metaphor.
Yeah, and my pain just got worse and worse slowly over time, so it became my new normal.
Right.
So
just like your allergies.
Mm-hmm.
You're just a tough girl.
I think so. The tough while also crying the most.
Severe pain and losing 1 to 2 days a month, like in bed, heating pad, Tylenol. Like,
oh my God.
Yeah, and maxing out on whatever medication I had, like taking the you know, absolute maximum and having no relief at all. So the IUI really made me feel like, oh, this is a real issue. So then I saw a webcomic about someone else with endometriosis. And in this woman's webcomic, she recommended...
Wait, what's a webcomic?
Like, just like a comic, but I guess it was shared on the internet. So that's
mean like a drawing?
Yeah.
Who am I?
What did you think that
I
was?
Know, like a stand-up comedian. Like a comedian that only does web stand-up.
If there was a web comic who just did like PSAs about endo, that would really, I think, change the story.
Wow.
For the better.
Yeah.
We need this person. Well, so I saw this comic and the person who wrote it, she said, if you think you might have endo, the first thing you need to do is join this Facebook group, mm-hmm. which sounds insane because Facebook is mostly full of like anti-vaxxers and like not scientific stuff. Mm-hmm. But this Facebook group was legit. It's called Nancy's Nook. Okay. And Nancy does not mess around.
But that's not a great name for people to know that there's an endo group out there. Like, does it say somewhere endometriosis support group or anything like that?
No, and Nancy makes it very clear it is not a support group.
Oh, okay.
Do not be there for support. No one will hold your hand there. It is facts.
Facts. Got mm-hmm. it.
Yeah.
There's like a time limit. You have to wait a certain amount of time before you can ask a question because they want you to spend that week or two reading all the back, yes. you know, the timeline of all the other questions that have been asked.
But yeah. Nancy's right. She's right.
Yeah.
So I read everything and then I was, you know, I had done my research. I was pretty certain I had it. I met with another doctor. There's too many doctors in the story, but I met with Dr. Lawrence Orbuck. He is amazing. His wife, Irene Orbuck, is amazing. And they are endo experts. And I had a consult with him and he was the first person who took me seriously.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are they fertility doctors or are they just specialize in endometriosis?
They just specialize in endometriosis.
Wow. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And so, go ahead.
Sorry. I'm sorry for interrupting. It's your uterus. You go ahead.
Okay. well, now I'm just curious about what you're going to say.
Just like how crazy it is. Like there are such huge disparities in the study of the female reproductive system versus any ailment that can befall a man. And it's, I don't have female reproductive organs, but like to see Sarah go through it was just like shocking. And that it's 2019 at this point, and there's the only way to confirm that you have endometriosis is to cut you open and see it. Dr. Orbuck told Sarah, like, I think you have it. Like, everything you're saying suggests that you do. But the only way I can know is when I cut you open.
Do you think that, like, the lack of knowledge about the female body is because our bodies are more complicated? Or is it because nobody ever paid attention throughout the millennia?
Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody paid attention.
Gosh.
Yeah. Well, there's been a lot of research that, like, you know, when they do tests of new medication and stuff, they only recently, like I think in the 80s or 90s, made a law that you have to test it on women and men.
Oh my
because
gosh.
Before that, they would just like test it on men and be like, well, this is fine. And then they'd give it to women and women would have terrible side effects or different symptoms or, you know, it would just be totally different.
Yeah.
Because our bodies are different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, nobody cared. And it's also, it's pain. And they for sure don't care about our pain.
Right.
Like,
just like me before I was 35.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're like, I don't have that. What? Baby? Yeah. So Dr. Lawrence Orbuck really thought I had it and was really lovely and sweet. And I sort of switched sides and I was like, well, it's not that bad. You know what? Never mind. And he's like, well, like, I was like, I can just live with this pain. And he was like, but why? And also, it will only get worse. Like, you're missing 2 days of your life every month right now, but this could grow to weeks of your life every month. But I was really scared and I kept trying to cancel the surgery. I didn't want to do it.
And so the surgery, was it exploratory or was it to clean out any endometriosis?
It's kind of both.
Okay. If they see it in there when they go in, they'll just work on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. They can't know until you get in, but if they find it, they're going to do everything and they're going to look everywhere. Yeah.
All throughout your abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that brings us up to...
Well, they found it and they...
Yeah.
They got a lot. I mean, there was a lot.
Yeah.
It was widespread. And it was, they took out her appendix, which was also infected endometriosis.
Yeah.
Should we remind the listeners what endometriosis is?
I would love to because it took me so long to figure out I had it. What it is endometrium, right?
Go on.
Yes. That is inside your uterus. And that's good. Endometriosis is it's cells that they are very similar to endometrium. They're not exactly the same, but they're incredibly similar and they mimic the symptoms and the things that endometrium does. In endometriosis, these other cells, they are in places outside of your uterus. Mm-hmm. So every month when a woman has her period and you might get crampy and everything gets inflamed, those other cells are getting inflamed and having these issues, but they can't leave your body.
Right, they're just anywhere to stuck. Go.
Yes. So, like, after the surgery, we found out that my left ovary was connected to my intestine, which explains that horrible pain.
Is it scar tissue?
It's tissue that does connect, and yeah, it can get all fused together. So that's what it is.
I want to point out the difference between the Orbux and other doctors who treat endometriosis.
Yes.
Which is that other doctors go in and burn the endometriosis. So it is kind of charring the exposed layer of cells, but it doesn't necessarily do anything to the endometrial cells that are underneath it.
Right.
And now you've just got all this like charred flesh in your abdomen. Oh, they sew you back up and then you go home. The Orbux, they cut it out, which is a newer procedure. It takes a little bit longer to heal, I think, but you're basically resetting the clock.
Okay.
So it could come back. It probably will come back over the, you know, length of Sarah's life, but it's better to kind of start back from zero than just starting on top of this charred tissue.
Yeah. Were you on birth control pills beforehand?
I was on it early in our relationship. I had been off it for several years leading up to our marriage just because I got sick of birth control. Mm-hmm. But there is a misconception that birth control cures endo. It doesn't. It usually masks symptoms.
Oh.
So you might not feel that intense pain, but it's still growing and it's still fusing weird things and it's still wreaking havoc on your insides. Oh, and also my food allergies were probably related to this too.
Right.
Because usually people who have endo, their system's so inflamed that their system just can't handle a lot of things anymore.
I think it's like 1 in 11 women has endometriosis.
Yes, it is so common and we know almost nothing about it and you still hear a lot of misinformation and people will just, you know, say, oh, get on birth control or, you know, you don't have it or it's just, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's a lot. So I would say if you're out there and you're having a lot of pain or things that aren't feeling normal, like at least do some reading up on it.
Yeah.
You don't have to jump to surgery, but do some research. Yeah,
definitely. Tell your doctor, your gyno when you go.
Well, my gyno also ignored it.
Go to your gyno.
Yeah.
Don't forget, you got to go get your annual, girl.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and I think that's another reason I thought I didn't have anything because of infertility. I mean, I had HSGs, I had all these ultrasounds, but I didn't realize that endo can't be seen
right
in those things.
Right.
Because that's not where it is.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. So you had the surgery.
So that, brings us to July. I had the surgery.
This July, that was recently.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was June.
Oh, June.
Eddie.
He's good.
I like
it. It totally sucked. It was awful. It was not easy and breezy like my other little heart-shaped uterus surgery.
Yeah.
The recovery was rough.
How long?
I mean, it's outpatient, but I feel like it took me a solid week to be able to kind of just get up and move about like normal. And I mean, it also just is going to depend on what they find and how extensive it is. So that was not great. So then we had to take another few months to let things heal again. It's like everything is so slow. And then here we are, really.
Yeah.
So then we went back to Dr. Beck.
Oh.
And she kind of, I think, really lovingly gave up on us.
Why?
It felt like she thought it wasn't going to happen.
Why? I don't get it.
That was the feeling that we got. She never said that. She was afraid that the hormones that would trigger ovulation or the hormones that, you know, you have to take for IUI
would cause the
endometriosis. And she seemed kind of gun shy. And we saw her twice, I think, since the surgery. And that was the feeling we got both times. Even though we pretty explicitly said, like, we want to try an IUI again at least once more.
Okay, but you've had other things. How do your follicles look when they they go in there?
The follicles look, I was going to say great, but
do you have a good amount?
I have a good amount. My lining always looks great. The follicles, though, there is a good amount, but every time I go in, they say it looks like we're doing IVF and we're not doing IVF because
they're all growing at the same rate.
Exactly.
So couldn't they do one hormone that says choose the egg and go forth, little eggy? Right? Are they saying that there's not one follicle that's just moving out ahead of the rest?
Yeah, I think so. I feel like
there's a hormone that can trigger that to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. Dr. Beck, I think, kind of just I mean, she's an expert and she is on it, but I think she wanted to do things a certain way. I think she wanted us to jump to IVF, mm-hmm. and we don't actually want to do IVF. Mm-hmm. We've kind of already spent IVF money.
If she wants you to do IVF, then you're going to be on all those hormones.
Her reasoning is that the odds are better. So if we're going to tax her body, Sarah's body, better to have the higher odds procedure, despite the fact that we've told her multiple. This makes it seem like we're dissatisfied with her. We're really not. We really did enjoy the time that we, yeah. you know, that she was Sarah's doctor, but there just seemed to be a disconnect. So this, a couple months ago, we decided to kind of move on to another doctor.
Yeah. So
it's funny because I was telling Selena to go to Dr. Beck.
And if I was doing IVF, I would absolutely stick with her. She's amazing. But yeah, Selena and I basically pulled a doctor swap because I started seeing Melanie Lande and she's probably going to see Dr. Beck
okay.
now.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm so distrustful now of the whole thing. I feel like it's all pretend and I'm like, sure, yeah. I'll do this shot. Yep. I'll take this medication, but it feels completely pretend and insane. Like it just feels right. like, yep, right. here we go. Okay.
Okay. I have thoughts and solutions that are not, great. I'm not a doctor.
Okay.
When they did the IUIs in the beginning, how many follicles were growing? At a
I don't
time,
remember.
Because you should probably have like 3 or 4 if you're doing a stimulated cycle or whatever.
Well, so we're on our second stimulated cycle now. The first one was that one that was really painful. And uh-huh. that one, there was so many follicles that it was more than Dr. Beck had anticipated. And she actually became alarmed and made us sign a paper saying like, if there are multiples that we will consider, like that we would right. terminate, you know, blah, 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 blah. Because she was concerned it would be like an octomom.
Like 6. Yeah. 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 Okay. So to me, it feels like, well, I'm not sure because I've never talked to anybody about this, but what's ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome?
I've never even heard of this.
Well, if you're, I feel like responding to medication at a small dose that they do for IUIs mm-hmm. and you're getting that many, that seems like, oh, that seems like a lot of, I don't know. I think I'm going to look this up. I'm going to cut away. You know the thing I do. And folks, I really want to have an answer for you. But when I looked up ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, I realized it was way more complicated than I had time to figure out. Like I said, it's been a hard week and I just don't have it in me. I thought it meant that your ovaries over-respond to the hormones and cause way too many follicles to grow at once, which can be painful and cause your ovaries to get all twisted and shit and stuff. Sorry. But after doing some quick research, it looks like the main problem with OHSS comes after ovulation because the hormones leak into your system and cause bloating and nausea and all kinds of other crazy stuff. So I'm confused about it, and now maybe you are too. Listen, if one of you has experience with OHSS, call in and leave a voicemail and I'll put it in the next episode, or email me and I'll read it on the next episode. But somebody help.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, back to Sarah and Eddie.
So we're in an IUI cycle right now.
Right now. Yeah, okay. We're in the 2 week wait.
Oh,
but
you are.
I have zero hopes. Oh, truly.
My God.
Truly.
Okay, so how many, do you know how many follicles you had this time?
I think it was like 3 that looked good.
And it was a medicated, what medicines did you take?
Clomid.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, No pain.
No pain.
So not an injectable.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
And you did an Ovidrel shot or no? You didn't need to do the shot.
No, yeah, I did a shot.
The trigger shot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And so it was good.
Yeah, it was good.
How was your uterine lining?
Looking great.
Always great.
Oh, hell yeah.
Uterine lining all-star right here.
Yeah. The rest, not so great, but that always consistent. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. How many days ago was it?
8?
9?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. I truly have no hopes.
Right.
I'm not saying that in like a brave, fun way of like, well, like I'm like, no, I'm pretty, I just feel normal. I feel like my period is coming, which
it
probably
do.
Is. Yeah, I do feel that one.
Yeah, but you know what they say.
Yeah.
The symptoms are similar to...
Right, it's infuriating. Yeah. And yeah, insane because you don't know. But so we'll have to decide if it doesn't work, if how many more IUIs we're doing, if any. Mm-hmm. And we've also started a foster journey because...
But wait, before you move on to foster, which I'm so excited about. Oh my God. Okay. Okay. I've also heard of mini IVF where they do low stimulation because you're really just trying to get one healthy egg. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to get, I was going to say hundreds. You don't need to get 10 or 20 eggs or whatever. And I think there are clinics that do IVF for a lot less money and you don't do all the stimulation. Or maybe you don't do any stimulation. They just do the egg retrieval.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll have to look into that too. Yeah, man, I was hoping this episode I wouldn't have to do any research. I still might not.
That's fine.
This one was a pretty easy search. I just wrote mini IVF process and voila. Mini IVF, also known as micro or minimal stimulation IVF, is similar to conventional IVF in the procedures used during treatment. As with IVF, you have monitoring throughout the cycle, an egg retrieval, fertilization in the lab of the egg and sperm, and embryo transfer. What's different is how much medication is used to stimulate the ovaries to produce eggs. While typical IVF aims to produce several eggs for retrieval, mini IVF uses weaker medications or lower doses of medications to produce only a few eggs. It may also be done without any ovarian-stimulating drugs. Because lower amounts of fertility drugs are used, the cost per cycle is lower and the risk of dun-dun-dun, ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome is reduced. Look at that. I don't know if this applies, but it makes me feel smarter. Anyway, who should consider mini IVF? Mini IVF may be a better option if you fear needles, if you have PCOS or are at risk for developing OHSS, if you are about to start cancer treatment or doing IVF to preserve your fertility before treatment and fertility drugs might exacerbate the cancer you have, or if you have low ovarian reserve. With low ovarian reserve, high doses of fertility drugs are unlikely to produce a high quantity of eggs, so you save a lot of money. Also, if you don't have the cash for conventional IVF, it can be less expensive. A couple may also choose mini IVF if they want to avoid the possible risk of multiples during IUI treatment. With IUI, the doctor can't control how many eggs may fertilize. With mini IVF, you can decide to transfer just one or two embryos. Another reason that I'm going to throw in there is that if you have a moral issue with having a bunch of embryos out there in the world, you can do mini IVF and not have to wonder what you're going to do with your five or six leftover embryos that are frozen. Okay, back to my friends.
I mean, I think we're just, the IVF thing, it obviously has worked really well for a lot of people, and it's a great option. I think we're just not very excited about that option. And also at this point, we have spent as much as we would on IVF on my two surgeries and everything else, which it isn't just about money, but it's like, we'd like
Please
to have a baby.
Tell me insurance covered your laparoscopic thing. Come on.
Good God, no.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so we were on Obamacare at the time, and they said, you have to pay whatever the patient's responsibility or whatever the term is.
The deductible?
But it wasn't a deductible. It was like, you pay us a new used car fee, like the amount of money that could have been to get a new used car, right? And then we bill your insurance basically the same amount. Mm-hmm. So, like, I pay, let's say, $15,000, and then they bill insurance $15,000.
Okay.
We pay $15,000. And then if the insurance pays it, great. If they say that they're only going to pay $100, then that's what we take, and that's it. And I was like, wait a minute. Why don't I get that deal?
Yeah.
Like, why did they get away with only paying you $100, but I have to pay you $15,000 or $18,000 it is? So
that's terrible.
So to answer your question, insurance paid them something, I don't know what, but that didn't change
what
my
you paid.
Yeah.
But I also think people don't know endo and they don't care about it. And so, you know, a lot of fertility.
What does Nancy on Facebook say?
Oh, it's different in lots of states. That's a lot of reading.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
But Nancy would know. And she would answer very briefly and then turn off comments. That would be her way.
Going back to the question about IVF, for me, it really is more than the money. I know I just made a whole story about spending thousands of dollars, but it's like every time, you know, there's so many appointments. You try to not get your hopes up, but your hopes go up and you have to have the conversations with your parents and with your close friends. And if you could tell me whatever, IVF, mini IVF, like, you're going to do this, and then at the end of it, you're going to have a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, I would absolutely do it. And I would borrow every dollar I could get to do it. Mm-hmm. But no process gives you that guarantee. Mm-hmm. And fostering doesn't either.
Right.
But I guess for us, when we're kind of weighing our options, you know, fostering, there's a child there. There's a baby there that needs a home. And that's more palatable. We had always talked about fostering even before we encountered infertility. So it seems like kind of if we can't do it this way with IUI, then we're going to do that next.
Wow.
But that's terrifying too.
I got chills. I love it.
We wanted to do both things.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted it to go a certain way and it might not go that way. And there's like a lot of grief in infertility.
Yeah.
That I don't know if people know about because you haven't. Well, I guess some people do lose someone or something because of miscarriage and whatnot. But I've never been pregnant. Mm. But there is grief. Like, I go through anger. I go through bargaining. I go through denial.
It's grief for something that you never had and mm-hmm. never get to have.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of grief.
Yeah. And I think the anger part of that grief is one of the things that I find most challenging about the whole process. Because there's no one to be mad at. But yet, I'm mad. Like, I do get mad. And I used to, you know, a lot of people are like, well, I love my baby. I used to love all babies and all kids and I couldn't get enough. And now I'm like, well, I don't want to see your baby pictures.
I know. So you think your next move, if this IUI doesn't work, is probably more research into the foster or you've already started the research or?
The thing is, we might do another IUI. It is, I mean, because it's like, we're doing this one. I feel like the other one didn't count because my body had endo in it
right.
and it was a mess. So we might do a few more, but it's so hard to know too when to stop. Like,
right.
Because you're like, well, I've already spent this much money and time. What's a little bit more money and time?
Yeah.
But at a certain point, we will stop. And we've already started the process. The only thing we have to do, and I say only, but it's still a big thing, is the home approval.
Okay.
But we did all the online training.
Did you use an agency like those other peeps?
Mm-hmm.
Not the same one, a different one?
We used HFS, which stands for Holy Family Services.
Correct.
Is it religious?
It was, yes. I'm an Episcopalian and it's somehow affiliated with the Episcopalian mm-hmm. church, but they just want to put kids in
right.
homes.
There's no religious requirement for mm-hmm. prospective parents and they don't ask you anything about that.
No, mm-hmm. not at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we, did the applications. We've had 3 meetings with social workers, with our social worker. We just have 1 meeting left, but before we can have that meeting, we have to have the room ready.
Yeah.
Everything but the crib. And uh-huh. we've kind of been putting that off until we were certain because you don't want to walk past, I don't know where you are, like if you've got a room ready, but like I don't want to walk past an empty kid's room.
No.
It's like I have not
bought, you know, I feel like some women go and have an IUI and then they buy all kinds of baby clothes and mm-hmm. get things embroidered.
Ugh. Yeah, more power to them. Clearly they're stronger than we are.
I do have a couple. Well, it's, you know what? I was pregnant, so it's okay that I bought a couple loose clothes.
Yeah.
I didn't spend mm-hmm. a lot of money, but they're in my closet in an area. I'm like, I can't wait to wear you.
Yeah.
Just some loose pants.
That's not too indulgent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't want to have a full decked out room, so we're just kind of, we want to just be done.
So when it's time to go, it's time to go, and you're ready. You're ready to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And did you have to do an orientation there? Have you learned a lot about the whole thing? Yeah, you've just been into it.
Yeah, I think we have learned a lot, and mm-hmm. I mean, I think a lot of people say this, but actually, the info you get is really valuable. I think for any parent, and it's kind of crazy that some people don't have to do anything and they're just like, here's my baby.
Yeah.
They'll be fine in this shoebox. Like, I mean, that's probably not. But we learned about trauma, of course, and different attachment styles mm-hmm. and all kinds of things.
Yeah. I already forgot about the 15 hours of online training we had to do or whatever it was. Yeah.
I haven't because Betsy is forever in my mind. Oh. There was this woman in the training, I think her name was Betsy, and she would always give the most warm, empathetic advice, but in the most dead voice possible. And it was sort of fascinating.
Oh, Betsy.
But yeah, so we've learned a lot, and...
What do you guys do?
I'm an actor slash improv teacher.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. At Comedy Sports?
Some of it's through Comedy Sports, and then I also work at some other schools separately through different school districts. And then Eddie is a writer.
A webcomic?
Yep. You can come see me at the online-only improv. I'm doing a tight five.
What kind of writing?
I write for half-hour.
Oh, hell yeah.
Television shows.
I don't know why I asked that. I just kind of was thinking about... Well, I guess I was thinking about money, guys.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, we're always thinking about that.
Thank you for bringing that up, because this was something that we had talked about wanting to say, that like a component of this is the privilege of being able to afford, either on your own or with the help of family or friends, I guess, like being able to afford these procedures, which are never inexpensive.
Yeah, right.
And we've been lucky in that kind of the jobs come right at the time that we need the money to come.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how much longer that'll be. Like, I'm not working right now and maybe I'll never work again. But
this world we live in is so crazy.
The world of webcomics. So, I don't know. It's just something that we think about and kind of, I wasn't working when we started the fostering kind of information gathering process. And that was something that I was concerned about is like, they're never going to give us a kid. Like I'm a barely working writer and Sarah's a, you know, teacher and actor, but our friends or people we met along the way were like, no, these kids need homes. Like,
yeah,
this idea you have in your head of like, oh, well, once my life gets stable, then I'll be in a position where I can foster a kid. Like that day is never going to come. Like, your life is probably stable enough right now, which is something that we kind of have to keep reminding ourselves.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah. It's just been a long 3-year journey. It's just also slow, too.
I hate the slowness.
Yeah.
But I feel good for you guys because you have the fostering option. Great. You're also still so young. And if you change your mind and want to work on things down the road after a year or two or three or four, I mean, I feel like you're still all right.
Yeah.
I feel like you're in okay shape.
Yeah, I think we're pretty lucky.
And you only have done one IUI. Oh, two, yeah. Okay, two.
Two, but one.
But it's, yes, exactly. But it's it doesn't have the highest success rate.
Right.
So a lot of people do eight. I'm not saying that you should.
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
Yeah.
And also when you do it and you've got a real man. You can have sex. You can have sex during.
He's
right?
a real man, everyone. Yeah, well, not for a certain point up to the IUI. There's a few days before where you have to abstain.
Wait, why?
I don't know.
So that the sperm sample is robust.
Oh yeah, of course. yes.
I'm not a machine.
Right, I forgot.
He's a real man.
A real man.
Yeah, it's so crazy because on the one hand, it's like this is only really our first shot, but. I mean, two surgeries and, you know, how many appointments and how many doctors and then natural cycles and then time natural cycles. So it's like, in some ways, it's like we're just getting up to bat. But then in some ways, it's like, this is the longest baseball game of our life. I know Eddie's looking at me.
I'm so proud that you used a sports metaphor.
I'm pretty proud, too.
That was really clear.
Thank you.
I understand now.
Okay, great.
I feel so like... I don't know, weak or small saying this, but like, I wish everyone in our lives was as understanding and supportive as you are, a stranger I just met.
The kindness of strangers.
But there is something when you've gone through it, and everyone's journey is different. I know you haven't gone through exactly what we're saying, but you understand the slowness and the frustration and the heartbreak. And, you know, the reason why I feel weak saying it is because, you know, my friends don't know what to say or what to ask or when to ask, that my friends with kids don't know what to say about their kids in front of me. And because most of the things that they say are going to annoy me.
Yeah.
And
so then it's not their fault, or is it?
I think you could be a little more considerate. Not you. I think people with kids could be a little more considerate. I don't know. I mean, people probably mean well, but like, what's frustrating for me is that a lot of friends of mine who have been through the fertility journey, I guess childbirth really is that magical because it seems amnesia. Like they forget. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, remember we were like next to each other on this road and then like you just, it's like they completely forgot that that was ever a part of their lives, that they had to do the shots, that they had the heartbreak of the bad hospital, you know, bad doctor's appointments. And it's like, I'm still here. Like, we're still here. So what you're saying of like, you could come back. You're young. I don't feel young, but you're right. I am. We're both still relatively young, but like, I don't know if I can.
Right.
Maybe, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I just wish everyone would hide their babies. Hide them, put them away. Yeah. Don't speak their names. But that's not a long-term solution. It's tricky. Well, and I think either their parents who have amnesia or they're people who don't want kids, which is fine, but then they really relish in telling you about how
like
happy
they're trying
they
to convince
are.
You to join their yeah. team.
Or they just don't know at all. And then they tell you like, well, just go on vacation and have wine. And it's like, yeah, I've done those things. Like,
yeah, we know how sex
lot.
Works.
Yeah, had a lot of wine. It's a tricky thing.
It's like me not understanding the cramps before mm-hmm. I was 35.
Yep.
Yeah.
But like, that is true. But if someone, yeah. if a woman was like, I have really bad cramps, you wouldn't be like, get over it.
Yeah, but if I heard like, oh, so-and-so's not coming over because she's got cramps, I'd be like, oh, come on. That's just an excuse.
That's fine. Talk all the shit you want behind our backs. I'm fine with that. We're certainly doing that. But just like, you know, when we're having lunch, like, just be a little empathetic about yeah. what we're going through.
Yeah.
It's just wild to me.
Yeah. But I think that is interesting that, like, yeah, until you have a certain kind of pain, you don't know what that kind of pain feels yeah. like. That's like a weird human thing. Yeah. Wow. You really blew my mind with that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow, because it didn't make any sense to me.
No, you did. Well, because we all have pain and emotional pain, but yeah, like, but grief is different than other pains and endo cramps are different yeah. than other pains. So that's yeah.
I have never been able to explain a panic attack to somebody that hasn't experienced a panic attack or yeah. just back to that grief thing that mm-hmm. I don't know what I wanted to say about that. It's just,
do you feel like you go through that with,
well, I grieve. There's along this process. It's just every step is a new kind of letting go and accepting and grief, mm-hmm. the grief that I won't have a husband mm-hmm. or not that I never will, but
right.
the grief that I'm not going to have the storybook or the blueprint that I mm-hmm. always imagine, the grief that I'm not going to have a known donor, mm-hmm. the grief that I'm going to do fertility treatments.
Yeah.
Rather than doing it, you know, the turkey baster way mm-hmm. that I had so much fun doing in the beginning. Mm-hmm. The grief that I'm going to move on to IVF mm-hmm. and do it that way and just accepting each of these steps. And, oh, the grief that I'm going to have to, now I'm going to have to dip into my frozen eggs and I might not have those eggs available for the person that I always assumed was going to be there. The person mm-hmm. that I froze those eggs to begin with for.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So each step is, it's just a letting go each time.
Yeah.
And there was an article a long time ago. I think the basic thing of it was just like the grief for the life that you're not going to have.
Oh, God.
But now, I mean, I'm still not happy about the frozen eggs thing. But now I'm like, why didn't I want to use a sperm bank? Oh, why didn't I want to do IUI? Oh, why didn't I want to do IVF?
Right.
It's like, whatever.
Yeah.
It's such a simple, it's just the acceptance over and over again. But
it is the acceptance over and over again. And that's the tricky thing. But you do, I think, eventually make peace with parts of it. I mean, I feel like when we were first kind of starting this, I did not ever use the word infertility. And I remember
I just started.
Yeah. I feel like it's new for us too. And like when I saw the allergist, I remember that he like Googled it on his computer, like like I don't know why he was Googling it. Maybe that's a sign something was wrong. I'm thinking back, but I remember it was up on his screen and I was like, no, that's not me. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I haven't been pregnant yet and I do have allergies, but that is not me. And now I'm fine with it. I will be the poster child, I guess, of infertility. Bought some crop tops to be like, you know what? I won't have the pregnancy belly, but I can just show it all.
Look at this.
Endo scars and all. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're just little baby scars. They're kind of cute, actually. Cute. They're tiny.
Yeah, little dots.
Yeah, mm-hmm. little
How
dots.
How many? Four?
Three, and one's in the belly button.
Oof. Ow.
No.
Yeah.
I get a weird buzz in my vagina if you touch my belly button. Do you get that?
No. Ah,
listeners, dial in. Whoa. Let me know. If you touch my belly button, I get like a buzzing in my hoo-ha. I like, hate it.
Oh, not a pleasurable.
No.
Like,
it's like a zing.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like a doorbell.
But I don't know why that would be, because your belly button's not connected to your BB. You know me. I wasn't going to let this one slip by. I had to look it up. Okay, guess what? The belly button is connected to your VV and the PP if you're a boy. So basically, when you're in utero, your umbilical cord is transferring blood and food and oxygen back and forth, but it's also transferring excretions. And I think that means, you know, the PP and the poo-poo. God damn, my brain is so fried right now. Oh my God. Anyway, let me just read what this says because it's very interesting. The umbilicus is connected to your bladder before birth, and it's connected with the uracus, U-R-A-C-H-U-S. It becomes vestigial after birth, but this tissue helps in forming the bladder wall. There's a great amount of nervous intervention to this area, which indirectly connects the umbilicus to your hoo-ha and causes a tingle when you put your finger in your belly button. Okay, bye.
How do you deal with the uncertainty? Does that bother you?
Uncertainty of not knowing what the fuck's going to happen up there? Up there. I mean, I meant to say in the future, but up there works too. yeah, that's what you mean, the future?
Yeah, but like we're always gonna... like 2 weeks, like you can't plan your life more than 2 weeks seemingly.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know if I had to buy my plane ticket home. Like a week ago, and it was very, very expensive, $800-900, because I didn't know what I was going to be doing. Yeah, I don't deal with it very well. I mean, I try to ignore it, and I try to ignore anything that's a symptom. All day long today, my boobs have been hurting, and there's moments where I'm like, oh, maybe I'm pregnant. That's not possible. There's no way in hell that I'm pregnant. Mm-hmm. And even though I know that 100%, I don't know why my boobs are sore today, and every time... that thought races through my head. It's so annoying.
Yeah.
But I think ignoring it is what I...
That can't be the healthiest.
That's, no. So what is... I mean, I meditate twice a day.
Oh, I should do more of that.
So, I don't do it well, so I don't know. But maybe that's helping.
I bet it is. I've been trying to do that more. And I've like recently gone back to yoga because I don't want to feel mad all the time.
Mm.
And I don't. Like, I mean, there... I did say I want to hide all the babies, but there are babies, yeah. I like. I feel like I have to say. But
I feel like we're the anti-deans.
What do you mean?
Well, they're so
lovely.
They're so happy.
Hanging out with their nieces and nephews or something, mm-hmm. a week or two ago. And I was like, that doesn't sound fun to me.
No,
no offense, brothers and sisters. Ooh, I'm going to see you all in a couple days. We're going to love it.
They're just such happy, positive people.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we are so angry.
Not all the time. But now, yes. But we're, you know, we're doing downward dog and meditations, yeah. And it's all happening.
Yeah.
It's just part of it.
I had a terrible week. Well, the day after I got the bad news, I mean, that night I thought I was fine. Then the next day I was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
I slowly got better that week and I started going to yoga. And then I went to a couple Christmas things last Saturday and it was just all sweets and I got really sick. I was just too much sugar or something. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I woke up the next day with a bad stomach ache and or like my old heartburn came back and a headache and feeling a little crazy and like things were bad.
Yeah.
and I don't know why. On Tuesday, I couldn't eat a single thing and I was crying all day. The only thing that has been made me feel good since then or during this whole time is I joined Modo Yoga, which is hot yoga.
Oh.
And I'm sweating so much and I've been four times and
oh my gosh.
I love it. I feel strong and sexy and powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been really nice, but that's only a 30-day pass.
So, okay.
An intro, $50 for 30 days. So after that, I don't know what I'm going to do because it's so great.
The thing that I feel like is getting me through now is earlier in this process, I would have these feelings. I'd be just crying or whatever. And I'd be like, well, I shouldn't feel like nothing that bad happened or, you know, and I would try to talk myself out of it. And now I just really give into it. And I'm like, yeah, I'm real mad today or I'm going to cry today. And then, yeah. Okay. So let's just move while crying or float while being mad or whatever it is.
I wish I got mad. I get mad when there's injustice or somebody honks at me and I didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. I get really mad and I curse. But those are only the only times when I get angry.
Yeah.
My go-to is sad and or almost out of body or anxiety. I don't know what, but mad sounds fun.
Yeah.
But then who are you mad? It's hard because you don't know who to be mad at yourself. Yeah.
I think part of the mad is that some of it does feel like an injustice or an unfairness.
Yes, it does feel unfair.
Mm-hmm. Because you have friends who truly get pregnant on accident.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? Okay. Or people who are ambivalent about having kids, but then their partner wants it or whatever. So then they're like, well, sure, let's try it. And then, you know, so Esther Perel says that. Yeah,
who's that? I know that name.
She's like this therapist and she has a podcast that's just couples therapy.
Ooh.
And you just hear real couples therapy.
Sounds good.
Oh, it's so spicy. It's good. Yeah, okay, it's real great. Good.
Can't wait.
She says that anger is just a mask for helplessness. So she's too right about that. Yeah.
You had asked about the uncertainty. And so I didn't ask what you do, number one, for the uncertainty.
Lose my mind. Oh, yeah. I'm like, I'm such a planner, you know, and I need to know, you know, the show I just finished writing for, the first week, I was like, so when is this show ending? I need to know, you know. Right. It's just who I am. And the fact that I don't know what my life is going to be like in terms of my family invites us on vacation. And it's we might be foster parents. We can't just go to Vegas or whatever, you know, or not easily. So it's very challenging. I'm like you, I don't handle it well.
So I just remembered that somebody, sent me told me about a book called The Art of Waiting. I didn't buy it yet, but maybe it's
you're waiting to buy it.
I'm waiting.
That's how good you are at The Art of Waiting.
But in addition to this current uncertainty, there's the uncertainty of not knowing if your dreams are ever going to come true.
Yes.
And that I don't know what, I don't know if that's worse or this or less or what, but it's just I don't know if I'm going to get to have a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody's always no matter what, you're going to have a baby if you want a baby. And I guess that's true.
Is it?
I don't know. No, I mean, I might have a foster and to adopt, and not that that's worse.
No, it's not worse, but there's plenty of uncertainty
in that.
With that.
Yeah.
You know, and but maybe this is just the lesson that everyone has to learn about, you just, you don't have control.
And that's, I like to control.
Yeah.
Oh, so do I. We made a short film about our experience.
Oh.
That's one thing we did during the waiting. And now that's over and now we're just back to waiting.
Oh, I guess I do my podcast during the wait. Is this a short film that people can watch online?
Not yet. We're out to festivals and but probably next year after we get rejected from all these festivals, we'll post it somewhere.
That's amazing. Oh, that sounds really cool.
Thanks. I don't know. I guess the uncertainty is that's with acting and all that stuff. You're like, well, I don't know if I'm ever going to do the thing I'm dreaming of, but you can at least make your own things in the meantime, right? And you're like, well, I did this fun show with a friend or I made this cool thing. But yeah, with this, there's no real in between. You're like, well, I got injected with a shot. My brain is crazy right now.
Yeah, I hate it. I hate it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're going to end.
Okay, great.
Were we bummers?
Oh my God, no. I feel like this is interesting.
Okay.
No, I feel like this is good. My listeners don't get to hear me being a downer. I'm not being a downer either.
No.
We're not being downers.
No.
We're just talking about our feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think people want to hear our feelings. So I think it's good.
Thank you very much for what you're doing.
It's
just crazy. You've talked about this on other episodes, but it's crazy that this is a thing that nobody talks about. And that's such a frustrating part of going through it. And so I'm glad that someone is documenting this and getting different people's perspectives on it.
I love hearing what everybody has to say about it. And it's been helpful for me to hear, I don't know, just about your feelings and sharing in the commiseration. I don't know. Commiseration, I guess, can be negative sometimes, but this feels healthy to me.
Yeah. Well, we'll all, you know, let's all just have a baby at some point.
Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sarah and Eddie, for being my guests and for saving my ass this week. And thank you for being so open with a complete stranger, me, and all of my listeners. Having this conversation with you was really helpful to me in processing my current situation, and I do feel a little bit more patient because of our conversation. And, sick as it may be, it's nice to know other people who are in my boat and understand the excruciating frustration of just having to wait. I did order that book, The Art of Waiting, but now I'm just waiting for it to arrive. Also, thank you for reminding all of my listeners to tell doctors about their pain and to ask questions and to educate themselves. Also, ladies who have hardcore cramps, talk to your gynecologist about endometriosis or check out that Facebook group, Nancy's Nook. And now, bedtime. But first, a couple ways that you can support this podcast without spending any extra money. Option one, if you still have holiday shopping to do and you're going to do some of that shopping on Amazon, why not do it through the link on my website? Just go to spermcastpod.com/support and somehow through the magic of the internet or something, I'll get some sort of kickback from Amazon and you won't have to spend an extra dime. I don't know, it's crazy. Option two, rate, review, subscribe. Option three, tell your friends, tell your family, tell your boss or your mailman or your barista to listen to this podcast. Spread the word in person or just post about it on social media. Just keep spreading that word. Option four, pray for me. Yeah, I don't know, to God, to the Yoniverse, to fucking trees. You know what? Never mind. You're already doing that. I know how much you're sending me the good vibes. And if you do want to spend some money on me, you can always go to patreon.com/spermcast and become a patron. But you know all about that. Want to reach me? Leave a voicemail or text me at 323-741-1818. That's 323-741-1818. Email me at spermcast@gmail.com. Or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Spermcast. That's it. Love you. Peace out.
He could be bald and bearded, short or tall. Funny, smart, love basketball. From gay to straight, black to white. Tiny eyes with an underbite. I just need sperm. Spermcast.
An Erios production.
Powered by Acast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.